welcome everybody to another lovely Monday morning here in the world, and we are bringing you a brand new live episode of Mornings with the Outlaw. I am the Outlaw John Rocha, fresh off a weekend excursion, a little bit away from LA, not too far, but a little bit away from LA, just take a break from all the madness that's going on. Hope you all had a happy July 4th as well, and hope this lady who's joining me as my co-host had a happy 4th as well. Alex Shawshak, how are you?
Take a break. Take a time from the summer. Let's go upstate. Just saying, sorry, Hamilton reference.
Nice.
It's a Hamilton reference.
Take your shot, Alex. Take your shot.
It's absolutely not a shot. It's just any excuse to about take a break.
Well, isn't that what he said? Isn't that what they sing in the musical? Take your shot. Take my shot. I'm not missing my shot or whatever it is.
That's also a song. Yes. That's earlier in the musical, but there's a song where it starts off saying, take a break. Let's go upstate. Yeah. So.
Gotcha.
Because they're like, you need to take some time away from work. So it's kind of funny. But I thought it was funny. Whatever, guys. So I'm pretty excited to kind of get back into this. I feel like I've been seeing so much news and I'm like, oh my gosh, Rocha would love this. Oh, wait, no, we're not talking about this tomorrow. So I'm excited to get back in the swing of things.
Yeah, we appreciate you all being understanding. We do into a Friday show. I mean, it's my own channel, so I have to run it as I have time to do it. And this Friday, mm-hmm. we had taken off, and we just needed some time away from everything. So Alex and I had planned possibly to do a taped show, but maybe for the future, we'll do a little bit more ahead of time, so you guys will have content, won't have a day without content or a Friday without a Mornings with the Outlaw for sure going forward. But yeah, thanks to everyone who's joining us now live. Hope you all, as I said, had a happy July 4th. Want to give a little bit love to the people who've subscribed to the channel over the last few days. Mac9136, Christian Grant, Vladimir Sigurdsson, Ryan Gettig, Matthew Movies, MSL Boxing, Adam Robles, Black Masumain X, Bill Fossmeyer, and Gabriel Sanchez Analco. So there you go. And thank you all so much for being fans of the Outlaw Nation and subscribing. If you haven't subscribed to the channel, subscribe below. Maybe you've watched a couple of programs, you're not sure. Now's the time. Subscribe. Get us marching towards 15,000 subscribers. And thank you all so much. So let's jump into things. Alex, let's get it going this morning. There's so much news we've got to cover before we wrap this thing up around 9:45. But sadly, we have to start on a little bit of a down note, but also a note of tribute and respect. And that is for the passing of the late and now late, but certainly great Ennio Morricone, the composer, or Morricone, as some might say there in Italy. He passed away last night at the age of 91 years old. He had scored more than 500 films, ladies and gentlemen, 500 films. He died in Rome. Hey, it's a good city. If you're going to pass away, Rome's a nice city to pass away in, following complications from a fall last week in which he broke his femur. Listen, if you're a young man, that's a difficult situation to overcome, breaking your femur, let alone a gentleman of 91 years old. So many of you have already tweeted about him or talked about him. I saw the chat going on about it as well. You know, he won his only Oscar. Can you believe that? His only Oscar for Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight, but he'd been nominated before for Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven, one of my personal favorites. Mm-hmm. Roland Joffé's The Mission, that's a 1980s film that does not get enough love. Certainly, he did The Untouchables as well for Brian De Palma, Barry Levinson's mm-hmm. Bugsy, and Giuseppe Tornatore's Melina, and one of my personal favorites, Cinema Paradiso. He was known as the maestro. Yeah, Cinema Paradiso is fantastic. He also received an honorary Oscar in 2007, which was presented by Clint Eastwood. He said, quote, the music is indispensable because my films could practically be silent movies. The dialogue counts for relatively little, and so the music underlines actions and feelings more than the dialogue. This is what Sergio Leone said about Morricone's compositions for his movies, and said, I've had him write the music before shooting, really as a part of the screenplay itself. One of the things he was also known for, Alex, was having one instrument kind of take control of an entire score for a movie. Certainly Good, Bad, and the Ugly. You had that trumpet solo, the oboe in The Mission as well, and he wasn't afraid to use unusual sounds in his compositions as well, mm-hmm. like the sounds of crickets and what have you. Alex, thoughts on the passing of this incredible legend in the film world?
I really love it. I'm very sad. I was very sad. I was like surprised, like, you know, how much it hurt me.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. You know, he is one of the most iconic composers in Hollywood of all time. Any no matter where you go. Even he's kind of like John Williams, where you recognize the music, but you don't know from where, but you just recognize it. Maybe it's from Jurassic Park, you know, obviously he didn't do Jurassic Park, but I'm just saying he's definitely in those, you know, very small group of composers where you know the music sometimes better than the movie. And I personally, you know, I have never, like, I've seen Hateful Eight, and, you know, I one of my favorite movies of all time, Cinema Paradiso. So, oh my gosh, that movie. Oh, but, you know, I haven't seen, like The Good, Bad, The Ugly or anything. Personally, I've not seen those movies, but I actually really love the score.
Yeah.
To me, they're one of my favorite scores. I mean, they're like the inspiration behind your theme.
Yeah.
So they're so iconic. And, you know, they're definitely one of the most, when it comes to scores, they can be so motivating and emotional.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of crazy how much feeling you can get just from listening to it. So I can only imagine how, you know, how it is like when he's writing it. I just can't imagine that kind of level of talent from someone like him.
Yeah, incredible stuff. I mean, 91 years old, did so many compositions. Yes. As I said, 500 of them, worked a lot in Italian television, Italian films, and of course had his scores cross over in America. Mm-hmm. But again, one of these guys, just like Roger Deakins, that you're incredibly surprised by winning their ultimate prize, which is the Oscar in the film world. Very, very late in life, you know, for a 2015 The Hateful Eight movie, you know, Deakins getting it for Blade Runner 2049 finally after all those years of incredible cinematography work. So this composition, so it's interesting, the timing of it. Sometimes you can become a legend without winning the ultimate prize sometimes. And certainly he has been that. And I tweeted this. I said, you know, there are many greats in the industry. It takes someone really special to stand even above the greats. Certainly John Williams is one you think about when you think about above the greats. Mm-hmm. Certainly Ennio Morricone is another one for sure. So many fantastic compositions. Alex, I'm a little bit frozen. Am I still moving around? Can you see me?
Yeah, you're totally fine.
Okay, I'm going to try to keep going with this. If it gets too bad and it doesn't come back, like I can't move anything around on the computer, I may have to drop myself out and come back in. It's something that's starting to happen on this new MacBook. That's certainly frustrating. Anyway, Ennio Morricone passing away at 91 years old. If you don't know enough about his movies, or you've only seen some snippets of attributes to him, do yourself a favor, and especially if you're a person just getting into composing movies or just becoming a cinephile, let me explain to you. Composers are an essential part of any classic film. Mm-hmm. So go back and look at his incredible resume of films and familiarize yourself with some of the great classics and some of the not great classics that he composed as well. Like I think it's Duck, You Sucka, which is a great a Western as well from the 70s. I think Rod Steiger's in that one. That's one you can go and take a look at. So he was able to compose for multiple different genres, not just great big classic films, but also smaller films as well, and different genres he found his way into. So sadly, rest in peace. Thoughts and prayers are with his family. And sadly, we also have to report on the passing of Nick Cordero. Nick Cordero, who was a Broadway star, 41 years old. He passed away from complications from COVID. You know, as we're about to talk about Hamilton a little bit later on in the show, this is a gentleman who really worked his way up in the rankings, you know, had really questions about his career, questions whether he was going to keep going, and then ends up getting the role of a lifetime in the musical version of Bullets Over Broadway, playing essentially the Chaz Palminteri character from the movie. He comes in, he gets nominated for this Tony Award, and unfortunately got diagnosed with coronavirus, fell into a coma for 91 days. His incredible wife by his side. They just had a child who's only 1 year old. She, you know, on her Instagram was just promoting and fighting and helping him fight. Was there almost every day, I think every day. And Broadway stars were chiming in and sending in songs, stuff that they had done with him on stage, stuff that they personally wanted to send him. Mm-hmm. She was playing it for him. And then eventually, sadly, and this is after he had had his right leg amputated, after he had had issues with lungs. All of this happened to just finally, eventually wear him out. And he passed away over the weekend, sadly. So just as people were celebrating the debut of Hamilton on Disney Plus, we also had the sad news of Nick Cordero. Were you familiar with him, or did you see the tributes for him?
I personally have not. I was not familiar who he was, and then I looked back at a lot of things he was involved with, and I was like, holy, holy shit. He's like, like they weren't kidding when he said, when you said Broadway star, I like looking at his date and like his name, like a lot of, you know, people in theater, you know, you, I mean, if he's not involved in like movies or TV or something, I'm not as likely to recognize him.
Yeah.
But once I saw like so much he was involved in, I was like, oh my gosh, he is like a legitimate Broadway star. But he's definitely, I went back and saw some of the, some scenes with him and some of the stuff he was in Bullets Over Broadway, like you said. And he's such a, he was such a charismatic actor on stage, and he was so expressive, and he was also, he was a beautiful man, I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, just going through this all, it's so much in such a short period of time. I can't imagine how, not only how physically taxing it was for him, even though he was in a coma, obviously, but for him and his family. His brother is actually, his name is Zachary Levi. If you're not familiar, it's Shazam, that guy, you know, definitely not super well-known actor, right? But, you know, it's really heartbreaking to see this really happen in, you know, New York City. I mean, anywhere, obviously, and... you know, hopefully, okay, I'm just gonna dance away. That's okay. It's all good. But, you know, I'm just gonna run this, I guess, by myself. You know, it's all good. Yeah, so it's a really horrible situation. My hopes, prayers, my everything goes out to him and his family. It's a really horrible situation, unfortunately. So, yeah, so you definitely rest in peace, Nick Cordero as well. Yes, John is frozen, and so he had to leave, but he's going to come back, and that's totally five. You know, just kind of go back a little bit over to just, I do want to kind of talk about some of our favorite composers real quickly, just because Ennio Morricone just kind of steered me down a rabbit hole, personally, some favorite composers. He kind of reminded me that a lot of my favorite composers, oh, there he is.
Sorry, guys. As I said, the computer crashed a little bit, so eventually it caught up to me. Go ahead, Alex. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I was about to say, you know, Ennio Morricone, he's not only one of the greatest composers of all time, but I was going to say they actually played his music on set, like behind the scenes. So the actors would get people in the mood for it. That energy from it, because it was so moving emotionally. And like, so they would literally have Ennio like on a piano or have like a band or whatever, like actually physically on set, like in Italy or wherever they were filming, doing it. So I can't imagine like filming and then like having someone like doing, you know, kind of thing in the background.
Get you right in the mood. You
know? Yeah, right in the mood. I would be like bawling.
Yeah. Well, just to finish up here on Nick Cordero, you already said your piece on him. Is that correct, Alex? Yeah. Sorry, I got jumped out. Just one last thing on Nick Cordero. You know, there had been a big hashtag going around for him called hashtag Wake Up Nick. His wife, I want to give her a proper credit here, Amanda Kloots. Amanda Kloots, they actually met on the set of, or on the stage rather, as they were doing Bullets Over Broadway during the rehearsal process. She was a dancer in the show. They met, they got together, they got married, had the child, as I said. But he went on, he was in Waitress, he's in Good Vibrations, Rock of Ages. So certainly a lot of things that Nick Cordero was involved in. Zach Braff tweeted out, and by the way, Amanda Kloots had been staying at Zach Braff's guest house because they had moved to New York, I think, to be there. And so she was staying there in the guest house to take care of her husband there. He tweeted out, he said, "I've never met a kinder human being. Don't believe that COVID only claims the elderly and infirm. I am so grateful for the time we had." So sadly, Nick Cordero passing away at the age of 41 years old. Much love to him. For those of you who don't know, that's what he looks like. Very sweet guy, Canadian as well. He was told that he played a lot of heavies and villains, but in the end, he was told in an interview, like, "You got to be tougher and meaner." He goes, "I tried, but I'm Canadian, so what can I do?" So there you go. So sadly, a sad passing for us here in the world of entertainment, too. A double whammy to incredible talents leaving us. Yeah.
Is it true that, maybe I misread about, is it true that he is Zachary Levi's brother?
I did not see that. I think maybe someone was making a joke that they looked similar. Yeah.
Oh, because I thought I read it somewhere. Like, I thought it said that Broadway actor and Zachary Levi's brother. So in that case, forget me. I apologize. I totally thought, well, I'm like, they look alike. So maybe they have brothers or something.
They do.
You know, so maybe I just took that tweet or whatever, maybe too literally. So forget me what I said earlier.
That's quite all right. And for those of you who are watching us, for those of you who don't know, you know, this is a gentleman who went through periods of unemployment. We questioned whether he could be an actor. He tried to go into real estate. Yes. Like there were these other things that kind of were distracting him from where he wanted to go, but eventually found his way. And sadly, of course, because he'd already established himself on Broadway at 41 years old, there are so many characters you can play as you go into your 40s on Broadway as a male, at least. And we'll, you know, that's a separate discussion on it. But like he had certainly possibilities of more work to come from him and possibly a Tony win down the road for him. So truly a sad loss there. But let's move on to our next story. Let's get into our stories. And that is Zack Snyder right here dropping in some knowledge about the new Justice League, his version of Justice League. He went to let people know that the Ultimate Edition has now replaced Batman v Superman on HBO Max. So apparently you cannot watch Batman v Superman on HBO Max anymore in the original cut. It is now only available in the Ultimate Edition with the extra half an hour added on to it. And of course, there's a new poster to go with it. And that's what you're looking at now, that kind of vibe from the Nightmare storyline with Batman. If you haven't read that, that's where he has an incredibly scary dream that Superman has gone evil and taken over the world. And that was part of what was supposed to be in Zack Snyder's two-part Justice League movie that he was essentially creating and shooting. But of course, this is in honor of the you know, the release of his Snyder cut that is coming, and he's going to preview some more of this as well when the I think August 22nd when that DC Dome thing starts to happen and people are able to go in and watch this as well. Alex, you look at this poster. Any excitement here? Does this make you even more you know, like kind of psyched to see what you've got coming from Zack Snyder and from this cut of his Justice League?
I do want to mention a few things.
Oh, please.
Oh, yes. So I was not a huge, I'm not a huge fan of that movie.
Okay.
And I've seen both versions with including the extra 30 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, it's still not a great movie. But gosh darn it, is that a sexy poster? I was like, I don't care about this movie, but what's up, Batman? That's a, what's going on? That's I'm here for it. Yes.
Yeah, sounds like you are. Yes.
I'm here for it. Okay. I'm going to have to go back and watch it just because, whoo, Batman, Bruce, what up, boo-boo. So I am kind of curious to, you know, how this is going to apply to some of his future works. I mean, is this,
yeah,
I mean, obviously, I mean, are we going to kind of go back into, like, how far is this going to extend? So it sounds like they're being a much more flexible with some of his other works. I mean, I would have, like, I know obviously he wasn't involved with Aquaman or any other movies, but I mean, like, it just, how far does that influence go where, you know, he was kind of involved behind the scenes where he's like, where HBO Max is like, hey, can we get another, can we get a Zack Snyder cut of like that movie? Of that movie?
Yeah.
Like,
It's a fair point. I mean, there's unsubstantiated rumors from a couple of websites that are not that reputable claiming that Ben Affleck is having these quiet conversations behind the scenes about coming back to play Batman for, you know, on screen, do these reshoots. Because originally a number of people came out from the studio and said there will be no reshoots with the actors actually physically getting back in the costumes and shooting scenes. They'll do voiceovers, but there won't actually be them getting into costume. But there have been some rumors that came out. I don't want to say those are true because they're unsubstantiated and not from reputable sites. But you never know in Hollywood. Certainly, how many people really actually thought, other than the Snyder hardcore fans, that there was going to be a Snyder cut released on HBO Max. So the fact that it's happening, you just never know. But I think that I think him starting out with that shot is a way to let you know, you know, where he's going and what he's got on his mind. It's a fantastic shot, you're right, but it's also a dark shot. It also alludes to his approach to it, which was a darker approach. So certainly he's not pulling back on
a sexy approach.
Yeah, sexy, sure. Sexy and dark as well. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, his ears don't need to be long. He's not compensating for anything. He's comfortable in his manhood. He's not Bruce Wayne. So
I didn't, guys, that was all Roka. That was not me. Just to,
that's true. I said it. You know, yeah, it's true. You come at me for that one. But it's a grittier, dirtier Batman, and that's fun to see. And I'm excited to see what they're going to create here. And this gets me more into the vibe of things. And I'm definitely going to sign up for that August 22nd thing to see what new footage he's got to drop on us. Certainly want to cover it for the channel as well. So we only saw pictures of Darkseid or some movements of Darkseid. And so seeing this picture now lets you know we're going to get something. Because certainly they don't have to go and shoot a bunch of stuff because they already shot it. So it's a matter of just editing it. So whatever he teases us with, I think, is going to be exciting for those of us who want to see this cut of Zack Snyder's Justice League. For sure. Any thoughts here, Alex? So before we move on to our next one, any other thoughts?
My only thought is, will Kevin Smets and Chandra Dhandapani and everyone, will they have to know this cut for Schmodown? That's my only thing. that's just me. It's like, how many cuts do they have to know as Schmodown IG competitors? But that's my only thought process overall. And guys, just saying, Super Chats and Streamlabs, you know.
Yeah,
I think that would be pretty cool. I want to know what some of your favorite Marconi, scores are of all time, and how sexy do you think Batman looks in that poster?
Absolutely. Send them in. Send in those super chats. Send in those Streamlabs. We got a couple already. We got a super chat here from Andrew G. Would love to see Batfleck returns. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I would love it. I don't think it's realistic, but I would love it.
Yeah, you never know. We got a story that might connect up to that a little bit later as well. We have three Streamlabs that came through here. Andrew Burnett donated some. He said, rewatched Justice League over the weekend. I really enjoyed it again. Maybe the beer helped. Also, I tried to watch Hamilton, couldn't get into it. Well, we'll touch on that in just a second, Andrew Burnett. But I respect people who like Justice League. Certainly, Mark Riley and I had a Riley roundtable where he defended BVS because I'm with Alex. I don't like BVS that much. The ultimate cut only for people who don't like it, like me, made it worse for me. So I absolutely agree with you, Alex. But I defended Justice League because I thought there was some stuff in Justice League that I enjoyed over BVS. So it's a contentious situation there. So respect you liking it, Andrew. Absolutely. Haskell420 donated. Said R.I.P. Ennio Morricone. Metallica loved Ennio and his music and every live show since the 80s. They start their shows playing a scene from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and his score and the fans hum along. They got millions of fans to check out those movies and his music. I'm sure they did. Sure, and certainly that was the original walkout song for The Outlaw before we were worried about copyright infringement. I used to walk out to Ennio Morricone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, one of my favorite scores ever. Hill Nellums donated. Thank you, Hill. Very kind donation. So many great scores from Morricone over the decades, but one of my non-Western faves was his score for The Untouchables, Brian Palmer's Untouchables, R.I.P. You remember that score, Alex?
Yo, do I? So with C2A, I was recording with, last night we did like a call live episode and somehow Kaiser hopped on and Chance and Drew and a bunch of other people like popped on and I'm like, what happened? But we ended up talking about, Brian De Palma's Untouchables though.
Yeah. And enjoyed it.
It was like, absolutely. I mean, the score though, I remember like the movie I thought was great, you know, but that score, I was like,
love that score. The score when it gets going, like, the menace of the score and then the sweeping nature of the score as well with the heroic tones that he finds or notes that he finds in the score as well are juxtaposed really well with that kind of menace of the De Niro Al Capone that he was doing. So, yeah. Exactly. Let's see. Yeah, we got to – okay, so no more Streamlabs, no more Super Chats. Send them in, guys. We're on until 9:45, and then I jump on to host SEN Live today. But would love to for you all to contribute and support the Outlaw Nation. Keep the lights on in here. Give Alex some love. Give me some love as well, or show us some love for sure.
Please. I would like some, you know, keep the lights on.
Well, let's move on to our next thing, Alex. And we talked about it already. We alluded to it. And there it is. Bam! Hamilton debuted on Friday, July 3rd on Disney Plus. I finally watched it for the first time after giving it a little bit guff. On separate shows, like Movie Talk and other shows, making fun of the score a little bit, or the songs a little bit, because I'm not a big on the spoken word thing. But I did end up watching it last night, finally, when we got home from our trip out of town. And I have to say, I can't say much about it, because I'm going to do a review about it for the channel. But we had a bunch of people tweet about it and come in on it. Josh Gad tweeted, said that it was magical and pure genius. Leslie Odom said he put it. He said Leslie Odom was incredible. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. Sherilyn Ifill, president and director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. She thanked Lin-Manuel Miranda, of course, who is the writer and star of the show, for lifting her from her anger and disillusionment. I needed this tonight, transported again and healed. Thank you, Lin-Manuel, and this extraordinary cast for returning to the joy of this extraordinary work. Leslie Odom Jr. said, no two Hamilton shows were ever the same. This performance was special because in some small and indescribable way, they all were like jazz. You walk out on stage and surrender to the ride. There were some people who have issues with the show tweeted as well. I think Roxane Gay, who is a New York Times bestselling author and social commentator, she said she has some issues with how the show idealizes America's founding fathers. I have a lot of thoughts about Hamilton and the way it idealizes the founders and how such a brilliant musical dangerously eludes the realities of slavery. But Leslie Odom Jr. put his foot in that performance. So talented. I think it's a brilliant show. As I said, it's not some vulnerable upstart. The show can handle critical engagement, and the performances in the book and the music will still be absolutely incredible. Also, Helpless / Satisfied are such a perfect pair of songs. Yeah. Ugh, but then the Sally Hemings moment is played for laughs. Why? Yeah. So some criticism here, but certainly overall positive reactions to Hamilton dropping on Disney Plus, and a lot of people getting a chance to see it for the first time who couldn't get in, couldn't get those tickets that were pretty expensive or couldn't win the lottery in their respective towns to see it. Alex, your thoughts? Did you get a chance to watch this thing on Disney Plus, and had you seen the show before?
Yeah, so I saw it before here in St. Louis at our when they did a national tour, and I cried full on, openly weeps like a good like 4 or 5 times. Wow. like not like cute weeping, like ugly right. weeping, where I'm like, it was like a situation. It was really not cute. Okay. And I did the same thing. My husband and I, we actually stayed up till 2 in the morning to watch it when it debuted. And we were like, we don't care if this F's up our schedule. Like, this is Hamilton. Right. So I thought it was really amazing, and I am a history buff, you know, as well. So I'm not gonna lie, this is definitely an idealized. To me, it's more like a fan fiction version of, you know, what happened, and you know, and that's completely justified because it is. You know, Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know, he definitely relates to the main character who he plays, you know, just as so, and you know, I don't blame him for portraying him that way. Now, this musical shouldn't be viewed as how it happened, and you know, I you're right, I do not appreciate how it kind of the throwaway line with Sally Hemings, you know, and her relationship. The girl was like 14, you know, and she had like 8 children by him, by the age of 20. It was like bonkers. So it's like a whole thing.
And he never released his slaves, Thomas Jefferson. So
neither did Washington.
Neither did Washington. Right.
He had like a whole thing where he actually openly circulated, because in Virginia, if you actually owned slaves, if you actually owned slaves for so long, they would actually be free. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, no, I don't want that for you. So he would like circulate them throughout his plantation. Like every 5 years, he would switch them out, essentially. So they wouldn't be free. So he could pretty much sell them. So we, you know, I do kind of feel this way about whenever we do talk about not only the founding fathers, or just talk about, you know, the history of the U.S. in general, we do have to talk about the good and the bad when it comes to our founding fathers and when it comes to U.S. history in general. But for a lot of people that don't know about this history in general, I love that it gets people excited about learning about these characters, what they've done, how they've contributed to our country's founding, you know, because they're people you need to know.
Yeah.
Overall. So.
And it seems the point, you know, when they get to that song at the end, I don't know, can I say spoiler? I don't know. It's a historical person. But at the end, there's a song where they talk about how he's one of these forgotten founding fathers. Yeah. He's kind of seen as the guy who's on the $10 bill, but what more is there behind him? And certainly he was an immigrant. What they sing about him is actually true. He is an immigrant who came over to this country, fought hard, studied, worked harder than everybody else, and got into this position that he got into. And yes, he was argumentative. He was difficult. He had battles with people, verbal and Yeah, it could be.
He was a horrible person. Just
certainly, certainly cheated on his wife. Yeah,
he was aggressively so. If he lived today, everyone would hate him. Yeah. Just to clarify, I'm not saying
he'd have the top show on some cable news network. You just never know.
He was incredibly opportunistic, and you know, he was all about big banks and all that good stuff. And just to clarify, but this is just like everyone. Everyone has good sides and bad sides.
Absolutely. And so, And there's never been a historical biopic that was 100% accurate. You know, things are moved around to make. I think my biggest complaint, which I'll touch on in the review a little bit more extensively, was that we do not get the feeling of slavery in the show. And that's a really big deal. Yes, Hamilton has a couple of shots at Jefferson's expense. You know, fantastic to be Diggs as Jefferson. It has a couple of shots at his expense. But, I mean, Hamilton, yes, did start a society, but quite a lot of historians say he wasn't big. He wasn't that big of an abolitionist at the time. So there's stuff to explore here and examine. And I will certainly do so on the channel probably tomorrow, record a review for it. I think I have Steve Morris coming on. Steve and I are going to do a review because he saw it, I think, four or five times on stage. So I want to hear what his thoughts are compared to what you see on the screen. But look, if you're looking for fantastic acting from most of the cast, Lin-Manuel's okay, but I think everyone else is stellar and phenomenal. Some great direction from Thomas Kyle, I think his name is, and some really catchy songs, as you said, Alex, were singing before
we got
beautiful. On. Some strong songs overall. This is a show you have to watch and just get your chance. I mean, I think you have to take a chance on it, and you have to get past. I think it might hook you from the beginning. For me, I got hooked in when the Schuyler Sisters, had their trio song. That's what hooked me into the musical. And then from there, I went on. So I'm not the biggest, you know, rap spoken word. I like rap, but the spoken word stuff for musicals doesn't really work for me that strongly. But it did eventually cook into me, and I watched the rest of the show. So, if you haven't done it, give it a chance.
Yeah, not to mention it's, again, you obviously, if you're going into this, you're not watching it for historical accuracy.
Right, nor should you.
Like, you're not going to go into this and be like, I'm going to quote it on my history paper. Like, that's obviously not going to happen. Right. But is it a great time? Yes. Is the dancing beautiful? Stellar. You know, the acting, sure, like you said about Lin-Manuel Miranda, cool. But the music itself is so really great. And the actors are so fantastic. It's so charismatic. And it's the dancing and everything. It's really stunning. And not to mention, I love at the very end how they did the bullet, like the girl, woman.
Oh, yeah.
There's like one of the characters, the girl that does it, she's not just the bullet, she's death, essentially.
Yeah. Yep.
You see her throughout the musical. Whoever she touches dies within like 5 minutes, essentially. Philip and Lafayette and everyone. Right. So she's supposed to be a bad omen, if you kind of look at that. But so it's just really wonderful as well.
Yeah. So many great actors in this, to be Diggs, as I mentioned. But Renee Elise Goldsberry really, really stood out for me as Angelica Schuyler. Jonathan Groff, every scene he got into as King George stole the moment of whatever scene he was in. Just incredible stuff.
That blue is like, I'm so blue. And then it's like stomped. And then it went blue. And I was like, I did not know that was going to happen. It's so good.
His occasional crazy moments, the crazy eyes, the laughs, all of that just really well played by him. Certainly, Christopher Jackson is incredible as George Washington. Leslie Odom Jr. as Aaron Burr. And Philippa Sewell as Eliza Hamilton, I thought was really great as well. And not to mention the rest. I mean, the whole entire cast. Lin's okay, but everyone else is really, really good. And many people have said that if you see another actor in the Miranda performance as Hamilton, it'll elevate the musical even more. So I look forward to that someday.
Something also to note is that going into this is that a lot of Hamilton, you know, awesome, love her. Thing is, a lot of the foundations that she started the first private orphanage.
Yes.
She started a lot of, she was like the first person, she actually was like the person to get a Washington Monument in New York City and, you know, a bunch of these really big things. Thing is, a lot of these foundations were on the verge of collapsing.
Yeah.
And then they were like, some of them almost completely, they're gone until this musical came out. And they're like, thank you for so much for coming to see our show. Yeah. Just want to let you know these orphanages are still around today. If these foundations, so if you want to donate, please do. And as a result, they are thriving now as a result. So it's all because of this.
It's good to do good work, and it's good to, you know, kind of pass that on to people and get people inspired. People love media in terms of films, TV shows, musicals, plays, what have you, to inspire them to do things, you know. So it's a good thing that it's being used in a positive manner for sure. Let's get into, so it's on Disney Plus now, so watch it and look for my review either tomorrow or Wednesday, depending on how much editing I get done on it tomorrow. I might drop it tomorrow, it depends. But all right, let's move on to some of these super chats here. Jesus Ortiz says, I hope I said that right, my man. Good morning, team. First time supporting. Thank you, Jesus. Very kind of you. Have you seen Doom Patrol yet? I have not seen season 2 yet. Have you, Alex, gotten into it yet?
No, it's on my watch list. I really, really want to. I've heard nothing but amazing things. So, but thank you for reminding me, Jesus. So I would definitely need to watch that ASAP.
Yeah, the focus this week for me is Doom Patrol season 2 and Hannah season 2, which dropped on Friday as well on Amazon Prime. I really enjoyed season 1, so I'm looking forward to talking about season 2 once I finish that, as well as Doom Patrol. All right, here we go. Ryan Payne, what's up, Ryan? Good to see you. Alex, of course, Smets and Chandra are going to study the extended cuts. I study them. Hashtag bringing sexy Batman back. There you go.
Bet your ass you do. Payne. Of course you do.
Yeah, this is going to be a little bit of a controversy. I don't like this idea. I don't, it's not in the theater, I don't think it should be considered for the Schmodown. I don't care if their intention was to theatrically release it. If it doesn't get theatrically released, it should not be a question in the Schmodown. I just, in my opinion, that's because then where do you draw the line? I'm sure everybody who started out making a film wants to have it theatrically released, but sometimes they can't get that attention, so they drop it on Netflix. Do we now start going back and looking at like the Brad Pitt movie? Do we look at Bright now? Like, are these films now into contention for the Schmodown? I don't know. Some controversy.
Yeah, I totally agree with you to a certain extent, but a lot of movies that were released in theaters, there's a lot of them are so heavily edited now where you can't see them in the original form, with Disney and everything, where you can't see them the way they were originally shown in theaters.
Yeah.
So how do you study for them appropriately if you don't have the full picture? Yeah. So I can see it either way. You know, I definitely agree with you. If it wasn't released in theater, you should study it. I just think, how can you do it as effectively as you can, considering, you know, people like yourself and Bateman? I mean, like, if you take Schmodown seriously, which you should,
yes,
as you should, you know, then you gotta get flexible and figure out how to get a hold of these versions.
Yeah, that's another thing too. Do we now have to, for those, and there are competitors who might not have the money to afford Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime. Do they now, is this an expense they can expense the Schmodown for and say, hey, if you're gonna have me contending for this, do I get to write this off and have you guys, maybe give me a passcode or something to get in? It's a question. It's certainly a question to consider. Mukbang Reviews throws in a super chat, says, just support for your show. You do a great job. Thank you. And I like the addition of Alex. Yeah, so do I.
Oh, and I like your picture from the Vatican. I think that's from the Vatican. And it's not the same chapel. I lived abroad when I was in Rome and I went there. I was like, I lived a few miles away from there. I feel awful. I can't remember the building, the church. I feel like an asshat. I can't remember. How can I not remember? It's like one of the most famous chapels in the world. And I don't remember it. But it's huge. It's gorgeous.
Tim Franco chiming in and says, not the movie theater, movie trivia, Schmodown. I say make it all fair game. Okay, Tim, that means everything. So if that means everything, that means you're going to have to watch everything on Netflix, on Amazon Prime, on Hulu, all of it. Now, sure, Tim. Sure. For a guy who plays once every 8 months, I don't want to hear it. With the rest of us who are fighting all the time, we gotta worry about this kind of stuff. But I respect your opinion, Tim.
I cannot wait to see you, hopefully, in the singles tournament. Just saying.
Wait
to see you. Or in the team as well. Just saying. I really want to see it happen.
I'm good, Roka. Listen, I'm not scared. I respect it. But I know PJ tweeted about Hamilton possibly being part of the music musical category. And I'm like, but
it wasn't shown in theaters.
Yeah, it wasn't shown in theaters. I don't think it should be considered, but, you know, I don't write the questions. So, you know, we'll see at the end of the day. But I think they should release a list of the movies from the streaming services. If they're going to include them, they have to do their due diligence and let the competitors know which films that we need to be watching and being on top of so that we, if we get asked questions from it, we have seen it or have had the chance to at least see it. That's what we do there in that situation.
If that's the case, you know, we can get a Hallmark holiday movies as a category or like Netflix original movies. Like that's not going to happen.
Yeah, right.
I hope not. Jesus, can you imagine how many movies category?
Netflix bought a theater. So if they screen their films, then technically they can be considered part of the movie. So that could be
John.
I'm just saying, this is how deep this game can go. All right. Ben Rayner said, I would be happy if Affleck comes back. I liked him as Batman and Bruce. However, to be honest, the possibility of Keaton coming back has me more excited. Well, sure. And that's absolutely true because the Keaton thing is actually in the flow of what they're trying to create now as canon. So absolutely. But seeing Ben one more time, I think could be a lot of fun for a lot of us who enjoyed his version of Batman for sure.
And he's also funnier. He's such a funny Batman.
He is funnier. You're right.
He's good. So good. I wonder if he can do it. He'll make a comment about how he can't move his neck. He's like, oh, no. Wait, you're able to move your neck in the bat suit? Damn, jealous. I just want a throwaway line like that. That would be the funniest thing ever. I mean, let's be honest.
How are you doing that? How are you doing in the suit? How are you able to look at me in that suit?
How are you able as Batman? I mean, I thought you just had to like turn your whole body.
Anyway, Mukbang confirms that it is from the Vatican, and no one ever recognizes. He said, thanks, Shotgun Alex, Shotgun Shawshak. There you go. That's the nickname, I guess. They're giving me a shout out to Mukbang. Thank you, Mukbang. Let's see, Streamlabs. We had one come through here from Adrian Bailey. He says, hi, John. It's Adrian from the UK. Hey, good to see you, Adrian. How are you, my man? I love the show. Alex is a great addition to the show. Keep up the great work. I'm going to do my best. You. And Alex is absolutely a great addition to the show. Thank you so much for saying that, Adrian. Yes, true. We had 223 of you all watching us live. But only 105 likes. Get us up to 150 before we wrap this thing up in 30 minutes, and maybe even get us to 200 if you can. And let's make a goal. Get us to 200 likes by the time we wrap up the show. The more likes you leave, it elevates the show, elevates in the algorithm of YouTube. And also, if you're watching us after we've done this live, please leave a comment below. The more comments you leave, the more the show gets elevated again in the algorithm of YouTube. So please do that. Alex, I was going to move on to Henry Cavill. Have we got something else that's dropping?
Boy, indeed we do. Okay, so guys, if you have heard a little movie called Black Widow, I don't know, maybe, kind of. But Black Widow is actually directed by a very lovely Kate Shortland. And she mentioned recently during an interview that, you know, Florence Pugh, I don't know if you've heard of her, but, you know, she also, I'm sorry.
I think I have heard of her, yeah.
I know, maybe not, you know, kind of one of those best actors, you know, working Hollywood today. She actually plays Belova. She, you know, she's part of the, you know, Black Widow, you know, she's in the Black Widow movie, essentially, as her, like, I don't want to say replacement, but she's also trained in Russia to be, like, a new super spy, that kind of thing. Right. Now, she mentioned... Kate Shorthand mentioned in her interview with Empire Magazine that the standalone MCU movie was is meant to be a baton pass over of sorts to from Natasha to Yelena. Yelena. There you go. That one.
There you go.
She mentioned in the interview, Kevin Feige realized that the audience would expect an origin story. So of course, we went in the opposite direction because duh. And we didn't know how great Florence Pugh would be. We knew she would be great, but we didn't know how great. Scarlett is so gracious, like, oh, I'm handing her the baton. So it's going to propel another female storyline. And, you know, she mentioned that as well, that a lot of the other actors involved, you know, not only in this movie, you know, not only they applaud Florence Pugh and how amazing she is in the role as, you know, a young actress, but also a lot of people in the MCU in general are really excited about the addition of her character. You know, obviously Chris Evans, RDJ, Chadwick Boseman as well, even though obviously they're not in this movie, you know.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, but at the same time, they voiced how excited they are for her to be part of the MCU family. The MCU family, obviously, is a very tight-knit community of sorts. And so everyone's pretty excited. Natasha, but she says, Shorhan mentioned to interview that in Endgame, the fans were upset that Natasha did not have a funeral. Whereas Scarlett, when I spoke to her about it, Natasha wouldn't have wanted a funeral. She's too private. And anyway, people don't really want to know who she is. So what we did in this film was allow the ending to be the grief the individuals felt rather than a big public outpouring. I think it's a fitting ending for her. And I remember watching Endgame personally, and I remember being like, well, why isn't she being honored? This is like her, this is her family. Why wouldn't she want this? But I'm obviously, I'm not the creator. I don't know Natasha Romanoff best. If that's why she feels, you know, Natasha would have been, as you know, super spy, not wanting a funeral as a private person. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that. I mean, like you said, not a lot of people would show up, but certainly Avengers would show up. Like they showed up for Tony Stark. Certainly a number of Avengers would show up. Mm-hmm. You wonder if this is also maybe they had a little bit of oversight in her because they felt, because like a lot of people have complained how she's a bit of an afterthought sometimes in the way they've done things, not with the fans, but with the way she's been portrayed. Remember those original sets of Avengers came out, those toys came out, she was not included. There's a little pattern here of kind of discounting Scarlett Johansson's work in Black Widow from the studio, not from the fans, but from the studio. So I'm not surprised they didn't have a funeral for her. I thought it was appropriate because she is a spy, a secret agent, and she wasn't like the person that initiated everything here. But I like that Kate Shortland says they're giving her a version of a funeral or something like that where you can feel her passing a little bit more, spend time with her as she goes on. And yes, it pretty much confirms what we had assumed already from the beginning, that it was going to be Florence Pugh taking over the Black Widow mantle from Scarlett Johansson in this new movie. So this to me sounds like people are getting a bit antsy to have these facts out there for people to mentally start moving on to the next thing when the MCU starts going. You know, Black Widow was supposed to drop back in May, didn't drop, so we've been waiting for it. I've heard rumors that this thing extends out, you know, the coronavirus that's spiking so crazily in all these big cities. If it extends out longer, that they're going to really look at dropping this thing on Disney Plus and also Wonder Woman 1984 as well, dropping that on HBO Max. So there have been rumors building from friends I have who are connected to these studios who keep saying to me that there are ongoing conversations about these possibilities, and they're getting louder and louder and louder. So we'll see down the road if it actually happens, but don't be surprised if they just get antsy to move on. Like everyone seems to be antsy to move on in the country. Studios seem to want to be antsy to move on their timetables so they can start dropping their movies at certain times as well. But I like this idea. I like what Kate said, Alex, overall.
Overall, absolutely agree. Yeah. I just love Florence Pugh. 2019 was a banger, as the cool kids say, a banger. That's how you use it, right?
Maybe.
She slaps. Is that how you say it? I feel like I'm too old to say that.
I'm way beyond proud to say that.
I love it. Not to mention, I just really love we haven't really seen her in a movie where Florence Pugh in particular in a movie where she's focused on more like action adventure. I mean, obviously, you know, Fighting With My Family is a really great, you know, it's a comedy film. Yeah. Also, not family drama, like a family comedy with
themes. It's a good sports film too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's wonderful. But this is like a full blown action adventure situation. Yeah. And I love that. But I just really love seeing badass actresses really just jumping off cliffs and stuff. Maybe I'm just trying to live through them. Who knows?
I don't disagree with you. I think it's pretty awesome myself. Okay. And we'll see. I love it. We'll see it in Florence Pugh. You know, she's only 24 years old. I mean, she's only 24 years old.
Stop it. To have done so much at 24 years old is incredible, man.
I mean, she's got multiple Oscars coming for her for sure. For sure. And if you don't want to just watch the main stuff, go back and see her in Lady Macbeth. That was the first time I ever saw her. And I was like, Holy Mary, Mother of God, this woman is incredible power, has incredible energy as an actress. And she was 20 years old. So go back and watch that and let that sink in as you watch it. Eric Stevenson sent in a super chat. He said, did any other actor/actress have a better 2019 than Florence Pugh? As you said, Alex, Fighting With My Family, Midsommar, Little Women, and was fantastic in each of them. Agreed. Absolutely agree.
Eric, my dude, you are 100 and flip flippity flip percent correct, my dude. Yeah. That is so correct. I can't picture anyone that did better.
Yeah, no, not in 2019.
Other than my husband, but
oh,
you know.
Oh. Yes.
You know, because he married me, so, you know.
Oh, fair, fair. But, you know. Shout out to Lucas. Shout out to Lucas. There you go. let's see when we stream left. All right, Davishka sent in one. He says, I have a 3-hour drive and I am hungry. What are your top foodie movies? So, Alex, what are the top movies for foodies to enjoy? I mean, Chef leaps to mind in my head because that's a great film with Jon Favreau. If you haven't seen that, Jon Favreau. He's not French. What about you, Alex? Do you have any foodie movies in your mind?
I would probably have to say Spirited Away.
Oh, interesting.
It's animated, obviously, but I remember till this day, like Ratatouille kind of grosses me out. I like the movie, but it's like at the end of the day, it's a rat, like, kind of making food, and grease creeps me out. Chef is straight up food porn, I swear. Yeah. I've never made so many grilled cheeses in my life than after watching that movie. But Spirited Away is by far my favorite quote unquote foodie movie, just because it's so much variety of food, but also I'm Asian and I grew up a lot of with like the foods so seen in the movie. And so I'm like, my grandma, I can like picture, I'm like, I can smell all the food, like a scene in the movie. And I'm like, oh, grandma, where is she at? And so it's just so good. But yeah, Big Kahuna Burger and Pulp Fiction.
Oh, Pulp Fiction, that's a good one.
I don't really care about the movie all that much, but that burger,
Yeah. I respect that.
Yes.
Big Night's another one. If you haven't seen Big Night, that's a fantastic film about a restaurant and the food. Julia and Julia is a fantastic film about food as well. Chocolat. The Trip. Yeah, The Trip is great.
The Trip movies, when they go to Greece and everything as well. Oh,
yeah. Ratatouille is another really good one about food, I think. I think those are some good ones to keep you going on your trip there if you haven't tried them out. Maybe, and hopefully you're not watching anything while you're driving. Hopefully it's afterwards to get you. Oh, Good Burger from Ben Rayner. Yeah, that's funny. Good Burger is good.
Forgot about that movie.
That's a good one,
Burger.
Too.
Welcome to Good Burger.
All right, Alex, let's take a quick break to tell people about the stuff we got going on. What do you got going on here, Alex, in your world? What's going on?
I have so much going on. Let me spill it to you real quick. Okay, so tomorrow I'm going to be diving into a movie called Wall Street. I've never seen this movie before. I've never seen it before. So today I'm excited to watch the movie for the very first time and kind of see how that movie holds up. And also maybe I'll watch, Wolf of Wall Street right after. Who knows? Wow. I feel like it would be a fun double feature considering a lot of the consistencies and themes. But I'll do that today. And we're going to be talking about it on Cinema Bias tomorrow. So it's going to be all that in a bag of chips. So definitely check it out. It's my Videos Choose channel. Just look up Cinema Bias and I'm going to be there. It's so great. So much fun. Yeah. And also later this week, we're going to be having the Tournament of Champion Championships. It's between William Bibbiani and Ben Bateman. Oh my gosh. Okay. Again. So if you... It's going to be so great. It is the championship match this Thursday. Christian Harloff is my co-host. Nice. And it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be Thursday at 4 Pacific, 6 Central. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot going on. We're going to be chatting with Ace Cabrera on Friday on Call to Action just to kind of react to his match and everything as well, against Demolanta. You know, so there's a lot going on. There's so much going on. And I love it. Check me out at Call to Action. Just saying.
There you go. Lots going on there for sure. I might tune in and absolutely bomb that chat for Bibbiani and Ben. That'll be fun to watch those guys
do go it.
At it for sure. For sure, that'll be great. And especially with Harloff there judging, that'll be a lot of fun as well. Big Chuck 421 Super Chat here says missing the theater, so I have started hosting a movie night in my yard every Saturday night. Very nice. Personal suggestions for movie night. Whoop whoop. Back to the Future. Superman, great 1978, pick. E.T.
Ooh. I've never seen both of those movies in full.
What?
But I'll take your word for it. I've only seen like clips of E.T. I like started watching for the first when I was very young, and then I got halfway through it. I'm like, this movie freaks me out, so I stopped watching it. It like made me cry. I was like one of those kids that cried like watching Matilda. So, that Back to the Future, I feel like it's a great pick. I don't really care about the movie, but I love that a lot of people do. Yeah. I would have to say Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, that's a great choice as well. Who Framed Roger Rabbit, fantastic choice.
Great movie.
You guys just did a cinema bias on it last week, right?
It's so good. Yeah, it's so good. Can't believe I lost the quiz too. So
yeah. Raiders of the Lost Ark is a good one too. I mean, you can go through the 80s modern classics and not go wrong. And then from there build out to what you want to go
Escape
into.
Escape from New York.
I don't know if that's it.
Escape from LA.
I think it'd have to have, no, not LA. No.
Escape from New York. Fine. Yes.
I think you have to Thelma
and Louise.
18 and above, Thelma and Louise, depending on who's coming over, sure. Thelma and Louise could work absolutely.
Oh, wait, it depends on who's going. I mean, Is it like a family situation or is it like you and your buddies? Like,
yeah, right.
Or is it like a date night, you know, between you and your lady? Or just you and your partner?
Right.
So,
Your choice, Whoop, your choice, Big Chuck. Your choice, my man. Just to throw in something for you guys on my side of things. The content wasn't as strong over the last 3 days because I was out of town for the channel, but I will promote this. Aaron and I did a rewatch, our first rewatch on Strong Style on Friday. If you haven't watched it, hey, it was a July 4th edition. We recorded it ahead of time. People have been asking us to do a watch along of a match. So because it was July 4th, Independence Day, we chose to rewatch Hulk Hogan versus Sergeant Slaughter from WrestleMania 7, one of the most patriotic matches that you're ever going to see. Sergeant Slaughter had turned heel and had aligned himself with the Iraqis, and he was facing the real American, Hulk Hogan, in the match. And we rewatched it on the network. So if you haven't watched that episode, do yourself a favor, go and cue that match up on the network, on WWE Network, and then watch our watch along of that match. Trust me, you'll have a good time. Very, very informative as well. And one last plug for that interview I did with James Norton on the Deep Cut last week. What a fantastic interview with that man. And I may have caught him just before he becomes the new James Bond. He was fantastic for an hour and 20 minutes. One of the nicest people you're ever, ever going to listen to an interview with. Just so giving, so vulnerable, so open, so smart, so fun, so chill. I caught him just as he'd come back from playing tennis for a couple of hours. So his guard was down. His endorphins were up. We had a really great time talking about Mr. Jones. And I asked him the question. I said, everyone's asking you if you've been offered Bond. I ask you, do you really want to do it, even if they offer it to you? Which really threw him for a loop, and we had a nice discussion about that as well. Talks about his working on The Nevers, which is the new HBO show that Joss Whedon is doing. Whatever your feelings are about Joss Whedon, certainly he's been in the news. And we also talk about Happy Valley. For those of you who are Brit fans, Happy Valley on Netflix is a fantastic British series. He is talking about the possibility of season 3 coming out a little bit later on in the next few years. Because the character has his son in the show has grown up. So he talks about that as well. I'll be dropping snippets of that through the week to promote the interview as well. But it's out there now if you want to listen to it. And don't forget, later on today, 2 p.m. live, we got to Game Time. You see three people there, but there's a fourth person joining us from the beginning, and that is Mark Ellis. Mark Ellis is jumping on from 2 to 3 p.m. We're going to talk all about that Redskins name change and what's going to happen with that. Both of us being lifelong Redskins fans, you're going to get some inside point of views about that situation. Winston in the first hour with Mark Ellis. Then Winston's going to jump off with Mark a little bit after the first hour, and Jay and I are going to come on and have some conversations about the rest of the world of sports. So don't forget to miss that. Don't forget to come and watch that later on today, 2 p.m. PT. All right, Alex, I'm talking enough. All right, let's move on to our next story. Sorry about that.
Talking so much. It's ridiculous. You need to calm down, Luca. Just calm the flip down, okay? I don't think anyone wants to hear it. No way. So sorry, go ahead.
That's very kind of you to say that.
We all appreciate you. Just to declare, we all appreciate you.
Very good. We got to jump into this story. We're running out of time. We got about 16 minutes left in the show. I skipped a Henry, and leave it to say, Henry Cavill is absolutely happy to come back to play Superman. That was one of the things we're going to cover, but we need to move on for time. Let's talk about this Damon Lindelof interview he gave recently, talking about Watchmen. You know, that series, HBO dropped it for people to watch for free. All the episodes on a binge. I think it was a Saturday or Sunday recently. They dropped it for people to enjoy and watch for free. They didn't have to be HBO subscribers. It got great reviews, solid ratings, and a lot of people have been talking about a second season. Well, Damon Lindelof addressed it. He said, the legacy of Watchmen is Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons created it, and it sat for 30 years. Obviously, Zack Snyder made his movie, which was a pretty canonical adaptation of the 12 issues. And then we made our season of television. That was my turn. I got in the middle of the dance floor for a minute and got to do my move. But then you retreat to the edge of the circle and it's someone else's turn to dance. Suffice it to say that I just feel like what's best for Watchmen, this thing that I love, is for someone else to take their shot at it. I think that's just going to be much more interesting than anything that I would do moving forwards. I issue this invitation to anyone out there. If you have an idea, figure out a way to pitch it, but probably not to me. Watchmen is not mine. It's ours. And I want to see how someone else interprets this incredible story. Alex, I love what he said here. It's a very thoughtful, analytical, and respectful comment to this situation. What do you think?
I think this is pretty awesome. I'm not going to lie. I have not seen the show personally. However, I do know everyone that's, at least everyone that I've talked to, everyone that I've know that's seen the show raves about it. It's like the best show on television. It's one of the best shows we've ever seen on television. Like, no pressure, dude. but actually also kind of love the idea that, you know, he's kind of walking away from his success and he's like, this is a world that's not just for me. You know, we got creative and had fun with it. And, you know, for this season, but this is something that should be, that's just so interesting and weird and creepy and fun at the same time that, you know, we want to see these different interpretations, you know, from different creators. So I would actually kind of love this, you know, as much as I love, you know, I would love for him to come back. Having personally never seen the show, that sounds kind of weird, but I would love for him to come back. Given his success, I've seen some of his other shows, like The Leftovers. I've seen The Leftovers.
Oh, yeah.
And I have so much confidence in his creator. You know, just someone that's just so involved behind the scenes, like him and Dave Filoni. I'm like, no matter what they do, I'm like, I'm game, you know? Yeah. So him going into this, and I mean, him deciding, hey, someone else take the wheel for this. Yeah. I'm just like, dude, that takes balls. Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. You know, it certainly speaks of the fact that he has no ego about the project. Yes. He did what he did and he's happy to, like you said, I got to turn on the dance floor and did my thing. Just like at a wedding reception, you do your moves and then you move to the circle and move back to the circle and wait for someone to slide in and do their moves. And sometimes they're great and sometimes they're not so great. You just got to see what happens. But I think we saw such an incredible series. Alex, I encourage you to watch it because, especially on the heels of the Black Lives Matter protests and all of this happening, that show is so, how can I say this, recently prescient with its approach to how we have ignored the Black experience or elements of the Black experience for a long time in our country, for decades, for centuries. We've wanted to bury it or push it aside or lie to ourselves that we've dealt with it and put it away when in fact we really haven't. And so I think the show really brings that out. I would be encouraged to see a female showrunner step into this and see what she can do with the world of Watchmen. I know Regina King was the lead in this, but what can we explore about female issues over the decades and centuries in this country as related to superheroes in some way, or have a Latino creator step in and look at the Latino experience of people coming over. You know, we see now, so how many kids are in cages? How many people are getting separated from their families? All this stuff, and explore the Latino experience itself. And there's a lot to explore. It isn't just one way. Trust me, it's not just liberal. There's a lot of conservative Latinos as well. So can we explore both sides of the political spectrum through the Latino experience? That could be fascinating as well. So there's a lot to explore here. And certainly I hope HBO is open for a creator to step in or a new showrunner to step in and do their version of the Watchmen and make it work for their story about America or about the world.
We'll it's almost like The Watchmen is like a political graphic novel or something. It's crazy, you know, with political themes. That's just an echo our world and how controversial and crazy it is.
Alex, you keep your politics out of my comics.
Oh, what? I thought we were just talking about the comic. I didn't really, what? Huh? It's literally all about comics. I mean, sorry. It's like the comic book, the comic series and graphic novels and everything. It's literally all about politics. And so if you want to tell a creator or HBO or anything that they shouldn't get political, it's like, what? Like, are you kidding? It's like, it's like talking about Alexander Hamilton and not talking about the war and not talking about the judicial system. Like, what? Like, that's the point, you know? So it's You have to, you know, so, or V for Vendetta. Oh, that movie is totally not political. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you, what? What? It's not like he totally blows up parliament, you know, or anything, you know, no big deal. Or about anarchy.
Good point.
So, yes. Whatever.
There you go. Wise words from Alex Shawshank. Charles A. Counters.
I'm an official poster, you know.
As you should. You should. Charles A. Counters the Florence Pugh love says, hey, ScarJo had Endgame, Jojo Rabbit, and Marriage Story, and two nominations in 2019. So maybe she did just as well as Florence Pugh. Maybe. But
Okay, you know what? Scratch that. Let's not compare actresses or any of these actors. They're all amazing. They're amazing. Right. They're both amazing in every single way. So let's not say one is cooler or sexier or more interesting than the other. We probably should say that. You know?
We shouldn't have asked, right? Yeah. Who had a better 2019? Yeah. We're asking it in a rhetorical sense.
Yeah, we weren't asking that's true. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, also really great suggestion. Really good one.
That's true. Mukbang Review says, sorry if I missed it, but what's the best film of the year thus far? What do you say? Do you have a thought on this one, Alex?
Mr. Vatican Dude.
You're gonna have to answer it. He did put the Vatican thing.
My favorite movie of the year so far. I mean, as far if we were talking about movies released in theaters, The Way Back. I love that movie directed by Gavin O'Connor.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck with Batfleck. Oh, yes. That movie hit me so hard. I was like, "Whew." But if we're not counting that, I don't know. Kissing Booth.
Kissing Booth. No. That wasn't even out.
I'm kidding. I haven't seen that movie. I honestly don't know. I'm trying to watch new movies that I haven't seen before. So I'm like going back and watching other movies. Like I watched Hello Dolly for the first time yesterday.
The Barbara Streisand one?
Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
Yes.
Directed by
Gene Kelly.
Yeah. Good job, Alex. Good job. Yeah.
Won 3 Oscars.
It did. Hmm. Not the greatest of musicals, but certainly one you can enjoy if you're watching it for the first time. And if you've seen WALL-E first, you'll get the references in the movie.
Yeah, it's not to mention with Barbara Streisand. It's like it's the first movie I've ever seen her in. Like I haven't seen I haven't seen like Yentl or Star Is Born or anything. Mm-hmm. But it was like so as a result, obviously I don't see her anything. But watching it, I'm like, no wonder people love her. This woman has charisma. And not to mention, she is stunning in her voice.
Charisma.
Charisma.
Jazz hands. I would say Invisible Man. That's my favorite movie so far this year. The Invisible Man. It's so effing good. Elizabeth Moss should win all the Oscars. And this new film of hers coming out, Shirley. She's supposed to be incredible in that as well. So I'm going to hopefully find some time this week to watch that and review it. It's on Hulu. Alex, I am so determined to try to do a review a day. One review a day so that I can get back into the rhythm of doing reviews. I think that's been a problem of mine. I've been nervous about doing reviews. I think I'm better doing it with another person. So I will have to recruit people who would be willing to come on and do reviews of me of movies. So start to look for that on the Outlaw Nation show or the Outlaw Nation channel. As well. So we'll see. And maybe Alex and I will review Hello Dolly. Ben Rayner says, politics and comics, Alex? You don't say.
I love Ben. Ben's fantastic. Ben's such a cool guy. Yeah, I love Ben.
Good people. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we've got any more Streamlabs or Super Chats. We've got to wrap up in about 6 minutes. Let's see. Oh, yeah, Sean Barito. Thank you, Sean. Donates him. He said, enjoying the show, John and Alex. Not having the best time in the last 24 hours. Oh, I'm sorry, Sean. Being part of this community helps. Well, brother, anything you need. You know, you're more than part of this community, brother. You know, you're my overall producer for the patron shows that we do. So I appreciate all the work you do. And hey, man, I'm always available to you. You know that. So whatever's been going on, reach out to us. And hopefully we've entertained you today, man, taking your mind off that kind of stuff. So Sean, let us know. Let us know.
The real dope behind this show.
Yeah, true.
The real absolutely. Dope. Just to clarify.
Break it down.
We love that.
Travis Earl says, damn, I missed the show. Thank you, Travis. I appreciate that.
It's Travis, I do. Why'd you miss the show? Excuses, obviously.
I think he's saying he missed the show because been. We haven't done it since Monday, so he's very happy about it. Yeah. Grimash saying, Sean Barito, you're on my mind. Be well. Be safe, dude. There you go. And was, oh yeah, Eurovision. Yeah, we're going to do a Eurovision review. I think me, Mike, and Shannon are going to do a Eurovision review for Geek Buddies. So look for that coming soon. That's going to be a separate review for sure. And any last things? Okay, cool. Let's drop into our last one before we wrap up, Alex. I do want to touch on this one. And that is an American Pickle. Seth Rogen dropped this trailer over the weekend. I watched it like four times. It's been a while since I've enjoyed a Seth Rogen movie, and seeing this trailer made me remember why I enjoy Seth Rogen. And I thought this was going to be an exercise in ego because he's playing himself, a Jewish immigrant who falls into a vat of pickle juice and is preserved for 100 years in that vat of pickle juice, then comes back to life and has to discover the world all over again, kind of like Encino Man, but discovers that he's got a great grandson who is also played by Seth Rogen, who is kind of an introvert and not really successful and not sure about his life or trying to be defiant about his life. And he's guiding him back into opening himself up a little bit more. So it looks actually like a lot of fun to me. I'm looking forward to it. What do you think, Alex?
Dude, I flippin' loved this trailer so much. I have to say, I had no idea going into it. I'm like, Seth Rogen, he's really cool. He's very hit miss. You know. Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of The Interview, but I loved, This Is the End. And, it's just like a fun time all around. But this trailer, sweet baby Jesus. I might have a new favorite for the year. It's like, I was hit with the, you know, the heartstrings were definitely pulled, hit the feel. I was like, Rogan, am I tearing up right now? Dude. But not only that, but it's, we haven't really seen him take on any kind of dramatic roles. It feels more like a dramedy, but to me, it seems like such a weird movie. I believe it is based off a book a novel.
Yeah. It's off a novella. Yeah. From a New York Times writer. Yeah. Yes.
And, it's just such a weird story I've never heard before.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
just seems so outside his wheelhouse. And, it's not outside of his wheelhouse to play in a dark comedy or anything really. But I mean, it's something that's definitely weird.
Yeah.
Well, he drops in Brian. I mean, come on. Yeah.
Brian, exactly. Weird. We've seen version of this story before in multiple media, but this seems like a new twist on it. It's an American Pickle based on a New Yorker novella, not New York Times, New Yorker novella by Simon Rich and directed by Brandon Trost. It does premiere on August 6th on HBO Max. But like for those of you who are comic book fans, Camelot 3000, they wake up. All the Camelot people wake up in the future, or they're brought back to life in the future, and they have to figure out how to live in the year 3000. King Arthur, Lancelot, Guinevere, all of them are brought back, and that's an interesting graphic novel if you've never read it. James Taylor sings a song called The Frozen Man about a guy who was frozen for 100 years, comes back to life, and has to kind of deal with the fact that his family is all dead, and he's all alone in the world, and what to do. Iceman, if you haven't seen that 1980s film Iceman with Timothy Hutton and John Lone playing Iceman, he is a caveman who is woken up after he's been frozen in the ice, and he is prodded and studied and put into this simulated world, and he wants to break out and kind of go back to his people, go back to his land. So if you haven't seen that, that's a quietly awesome 80s film. So certainly this has happened in certain forms, but this is a funny approach to it, kind of like Encino Man, a funnier approach to this idea of someone being woken up and how they have to adapt to the new world. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it very much.
Also, Brandon Trost, he's the director of this movie. He's actually worked with Seth Rogen numerous times before on The Disaster Artist, This Is the End. He was recently involved in the movie, The Drama, Can You Ever Forgive Me? But so he's actually good a film. Cinematographer, and this is supposed to be, I believe, his directorial debut. Wow. So obviously, this is going to be a movie that, he has a really great working relationship with Seth Rogen. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing it with him for so long. Right. So I'm excited to kind of see how that chemistry kind of plays out as well.
Alex, as we wrap up, I'm sorry to report this for those of you who might be watching right now. They say, deaths happen in three with celebrities, and Charlie Daniels just passed away apparently this morning after suffering a hemorrhagic stroke. He was 83 years old. This has been confirmed by his publicist, Don Murray Grubbs. He is survived by his wife, Hazel, and his son, Charlie Daniels Jr. So a shame. Absolutely. We started with the passing of Ennio Morricone and Nick Cordero. And sadly, we end on the passing of Charlie Daniels. So please go do your research. If you don't know Charlie Daniels, my word, please go find his old music from the 70s. His great Devil Went Down to Georgia, Legend of Woolly Swamp. So many great songs from Charlie Daniels Band that you can go and enjoy. So absolutely a shame that he has passed on. 83 years old, though, you know, you get to 80, at least for me as a Latino, we don't live long. And if you haven't seen the George Lopez special, or the new George Lopez special, we don't plan on living long in our lives as a Latino. So 83 is a pretty good year to get to. But shout out to anybody who's a fan of Charlie Daniels and for his passing. So sadly. All right. Well, let's wrap this thing. Alex, do you know his music or anything like that? Do you know Charlie Daniels?
I'm not going to lie. One of my go-to songs is Devil Went Down to Georgia.
That's right.
My go-to karaoke songs, that is. And then I like to do like a double song feature with, you know, Tribute by Tenacious D. You know, and then, you know, but I feel like they're perfect. They're perfect, you know, double feature songs kind of situation.
I agree.
Yeah, so he's definitely, man, that hurts my heart. It really does.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
He's one of those singer-songwriters that he has like a very specific style.
Yes, he does. Yep.
And it's so, yeah, it just hurts my heart. You recognize his music. You probably don't, you might not know who he is, but you like hear like five chords and you're like,
yeah,
I know that song.
Oh. I'm with you on Devil Went Down. That's one of my go-to karaoke favorites. It drives my girlfriend crazy. She hates that song, but I go crazy with it. You know, the violin. I do the whole violin, the whole everything, which drives her insane. But I love it. It's a great song.
Like
so,
the foot tapping as well.
Of course. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Exactly. About it.
And then I'll do the whole thing. It drives her insane. Anyway, yeah, so sorry for the passing of Charlie Daniels. We got one last Streamlab that came in from Andrew G. Thank you, Andrew. He said, Studio Ghibli's catalog has recently been put up on Canadian Netflix. So I've been revisiting favorites and experiencing new films never seen before. What are your absolute favorites and why? So real quick, because we've got to wrap it up. Do you have some Studio Ghibli's that are your favorites there, Alex, that you enjoy watching? I mean, a lot of people have Spirited Away.
I actually have a list of marathoning Studio Ghibli movies.
Please.
So I actually did it. I know you can't really – I bullet journal, and you can't see the list. But wow. That's like all the movies. And
that's
I've
good
seen
penmanship,
them all.
By the way. I like
it. I try. That's my also my list of new that. Movies for the wow. month. But I would have to say, looking at my star system, Kiki's Delivery Service is amazing. Depending on if you've watched doing a part of a family, that one also, probably my new favorite though, Ghibli movie that I recently discovered was My Neighbors, the Yamadas.
Oh yeah.
I love that movie. It just warms my heart. I had no idea what to expect going into it. It's such a really great movie overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to have to watch a lot of these that I've missed. Yeah, The Wind Rises, certainly Kiki's Delivery Service, as you said. I like Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. I enjoyed that one. Howl's Moving Castle. And Princess Mononoke is my absolute favorite. I like the scope of that movie, and I like what she goes through. To me, I just enjoy it for whatever reason. It checks all the boxes for me. That's my favorite. Spirited Away, of course, fantastic. My Neighbor Totoro. And Grave of the Fireflies. Those are all fantastic ones to explore. If you haven't explored them yet, do yourself a favor and take your time. Those films can be a little bit to get through because it's animation, it's paced, it's slow. They're not fast-moving films. They're for you to appreciate and be blown away by. They're essentially, like old-school Terrence Malick films, animated. They're elegiac. They're slow in terms of their presentation, but it's because they want you to savor the world you are walking into animation-wise.
And there's also a lot of really dark themes as well. There's themes of like grief, war, trying to cope with like family loss, environmental terrorism.
Yes.
Big one. Yes. You know, there's a lot of really dark themes. So, just giving you a heads up, be prepared going into some of these movies. You will cry.
Yeah. Yes.
You will
absolutely cry. Yes.
Grave of the Fireflies.
Yes, Grave of the Fireflies. That's a rough one. Absolutely. But somebody asked if Kubo and Two Strings. It is not. That's Laika, L-A-I-K-A. That's where Kubo goes. That is not a Ghibli one, but still damn good one. But Mononoke I've owned on DVD and Blu-ray. So it's just one that I just go back to and enjoy very, very much. So, all right. Well, let's wrap up the show because I got to jump on and do SEN I'm live sorry. Now. Yes. No, it's not your fault. It's people sending in stuff, which we appreciate. I'm glad you guys are happy to have us back. We are happy to be back. And thanks for being patient about us missing out on Friday. I just needed to take a break and get out of town. I've been so busy with so many things. So much love to Alex Shawshank. Alex, where can they find you and everything you're doing, please?
Find me on Twitter, please. That'd be really awesome if you did. I would love to get above 500 people here in the next few days. That'd be dope.
That would be super dope.
It would be a bop.
It would
slap.
Yeah, you say it. I can't. My mouth just falls apart as I'm about to say it. All right, there you go. Follow her there. Follow me at The Roka Says on Twitter and on Instagram. Come see me in about 9 minutes live on SCN Live. But also, please subscribe to the channel down below. You know, I want to make this a powerful channel. And you guys have to help promote the channel. Get us to 15,000. Get us to 20,000. This channel is a diverse channel. Asian, Black, Latino, white, it's all here. Gay, straight, it's all here. Women, men, it's all here. I'm trying to elevate this channel. Help me elevate this channel. You know, there's so many other channels that have just all white or mostly one color. I want to be diverse, and I want you guys to help support that with the Outlaw Nation channel. Please subscribe down below and retweet this episode or share it and like it, because when you share it, you're telling your friends and family that you approve of the show, you like this show, and they might take a chance on it and become fans as well. So thank you all so much for supporting the Outlaw Nation as much as you have, and let's keep going into the second half of the year and keep building this thing up as strongly and as powerfully as we can. Have a great rest of your Monday. Enjoy yourself. Remember, this is the beginning of the week. Do something really positive for yourself to get yourself closer to where you want to be by the end of the week. Little things can add up to big advances if you do them right. So, all right, that's it for me. Much love to you. We'll see you over there on SCN Live in about 8 minutes. And until then, we'll catch you on Friday for another brand new live episode of Mornings with the Outlaw. Take care.
And wear a mask.